All right, time for another chat with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy. We call them Tacky Talks. Just about every week, we've been getting updates from Representative Chan on what's happening on Beacon Hill and beyond. Tacky, good to see you.
Great to see you again, Joe.
Appreciate it. You are, looks like, tuned into outer space today with your earbuds in. What's going on?
Well, after having a heating system from made from the late 80s, it was definitely time for a new one. So we're going from oil to gas this week, and it's quite a bit of noise in the house, as well as potential vibrations coming on the dining room table here. So there might be a little bit of interruption.
And, okay. one of the many challenges of remote working.
This is exactly it. I mean, one of the benefits is you can be around with the contractors, and the flip side, you're trying to figure out how to work with noise. And I think all of us have experienced, you know, cats, kids, you know, weather events on these Zoom calls these days.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you again. And all right, since we're talking heat, let's talk about energy costs and what's going on in Massachusetts.
Yeah, everyone's going to be feeling a price increase across the board. We've seen gas prices move up to $3 a gallon. If it was like yesterday, it was only $1.99. And it seems like a long time ago when we were kids, when it was 99 cents a gallon, right? So obviously, as a pandemic is sort of maybe kind of manageable, depending what country you're in, economies are reopening. And you know, they need fuel and energy. Europe in particular has a huge fuel crisis issue. And partially because of renewable power, they didn't balance their energy properly, particularly in Germany, where they use way too much renewable and with no storage. Again, storage is the key to renewable power. If you don't have the ability to store large quantities, it's wasted electricity. So that's part of it. China is off coal. They've already declared to be off coal. They reduced the coal tonnage by a lot. They stopped importing coal from Australia as part of a trade war. But they can't drill enough natural gas to make up the difference. So now they're importing natural gas as well, like mad, to keep basically the lights on, literally. And you know, China is a valuable part of our supply chain. If the factories go down, manufacturing goes down, it has a global impact. And the countries that moving off nuclear, like Japan has been, again, there's no natural resources in Japan. It is a tough place to do renewable power if you look at the geography. So as a result, they're having to do a natural gas import in exchange for a shutdown of nuclear power they've been doing since Fukushima. So there's going to be a real effect. And people also forgot about the BP. Is it BP? It's the Mexican oil platform that broke off, and it was like a ring of fire. It was burning in the Gulf of Mexico for like months that everybody seemed to have forgotten about.
Yes,
because we're in pandemic, and you know, there's such low fuel usage that, you know, no one felt that impact, but we're feeling it now. And of course, there's international tension regarding places like Iran and other oil producing countries. So, you know, the U.S. is still the number one natural gas, oil, mining, generation, refining, et cetera. But, you know, China, you know, and Saudi Arabia, you know, are two and three. And, you know, people should be prepared to pay a slightly higher electrical cost again, because many of us working from home, you're already using more electricity you normally use, as well as higher natural gas prices.
Yeah. Are there safeguards in place here in Massachusetts to prevent price gouging?
Oh, well, natural gas is a pass-through cost. So, you know, in terms of electrical bills, it's 100% pass-through in terms of your default rate. So if you get your electricity from the utility company, National Grid or NSTAR, you are paying what we call the default rate or the basic rate, which is they go every 6 months into the energy market and we get a fixed lock price. But fuel costs are generally 100% pass-through. If you're using a private commercial energy company that is not the utility and you're buying energy on your own, those are sometimes subject to market fluctuation. If you're in a variable rate, if you're in a fixed rate, they have to honor that contract unless there's a clause says otherwise. You know, gas stations, most of us see prices change on a weekly basis. That is the wholesale price they buy, and gas stations make money on per gallon, not per percentage of price.
Right.
So, you know, they're generally up to potentially 5 cents, depending on the gas station,
yeah,
on per gallon. And, you know, so because price gouging of energy is you don't really see it much because it's subject to world market fluctuations. But the price of their profits already built in. Everything else is market fluctuation.
Yeah, and they buy on futures, right? So they're buying what they anticipate future costs to be.
Yeah, you saw that last year when oil dropped below $1 on futures because of a massive sell-off. Yep. So people weren't buying the futures and were selling off their commodities. But you know, those things are pretty temporary. And when you're doing commodity trading, you actually have to have some place for it to go. So if I buy like 100 tons of soybeans, I better have a place to put it. Right. Or be able to flip it really fast.
Yeah, else it's worth nothing.
Yeah. Otherwise, you have a lot of soybeans at home.
Right.
So it's the same principle regarding oil and other commodity products that you have to have a landing spot. So it's I'm oversimplifying it, obviously, very much oversimplifying it. But I mean, you don't hold on to that stuff unless you have the capacity to do it, and you're waiting for market shift. Mm. So you know, planning the futures is what you think the value is based on availability and what's going on, and you try to buy ahead of the market, for lack of a better term, and gamble that you're going to make money. Or you take, like you saw with oil last year during the height of the pandemic, the opposite happens. You get completely like bankrupt, yep. Potentially depending on the situation.
Yeah. Does the U.S. still import oil? Do you know?
Yeah, we import a lot of oil. About 25%+ of all oil refineries are located in the Gulf Coast. Mm. So, you know, every time a major hurricane smacks the Gulf Coast, it has a negative effect on refineries, which then, you know, affects the entire natural gas and oil and all the other fossil fuel driven industries. Because if the refinery shut down, you can't flip a switch to turn it back on. So, you know, when there's a major weather event in the Gulf, again, climate change is affecting us. You know, they would need to take precautions regarding the rigs in the Gulf, as well as all the refineries on the edges, and also the tankers that try to get into the Gulf and out of the Gulf. So it's a bit tricky. Here, we do have a natural gas connection line out of Everett. Mm-hmm. There's actually another one out of Halifax.
Nova Scotia? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, if you look at the natural gas transmission lines, they don't get to too much detail because of the national security issue, but you can get the general basics on the internet. You know, there's one off in Canada. We're actually part of the Canadian natural gas grid system, so to speak. Natural gas is like electricity. Once you're inside a closed loop, everything moves inside that same loop.
Yeah.
And Canada is actually, the southern parts of Canada and Halifax is part of our loop.
Interesting. Well, we're closer to them than we are to the Gulf, before, so it makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and same for them. It makes more sense for them to try to connect to like Toronto. It's just not efficient.
Sure. All right, let's bring it back home. What's going on Beacon Hill this week, Techie?
Well, today we're going to take a bill on regarding so-called caged farm animals, humane treatment. 2016, the voters, prohibit the importation of animals that are not provided sufficient light and space to move around, and especially pigs and chickens. It was goes to effect January this year. We're going to delay implementation of the pig component to 2023, and we're writing a brand new one for the chickens to reflect modern practices regarding indoor space to allow them to move indoors, and they have avian perches as well as more. It's a new way of chicken farming. Mm-hmm. So it's been signed off by the Humane Society, Division for Food and Wildlife. A lot of animal rights groups have already written to me saying that, you know, this is the right way to go. Talked to the supermarkets last week. We do have a supply chain problem. Again, you hear this a lot, that if we don't make these adjustments, you could be facing a massive pork and egg shortage. And last year, I think a lot of us saw the tripling of egg prices, depending where you are, because of avian flu. So we're still recovering from the impact of avian flu on the chicken supply. And, you add pork and other meat products to that, it could get pretty ugly.
Yeah, well, costs are already up. So that would only put more pressure, I'm sure. We saw that in the Midwest, some of the major slaughterhouses were forced to shut down because of COVID outbreaks.
Yeah, you guys saw the ones, particularly in Hormel and South Dakota, to shut down, you know, one of the biggest manufacturing facilities and cause a massive price strike. And, and people weren't getting their meat. I mean, supermarkets were no longer doing mass processing. You basically got slabs going out there, and you have to, you know, cut it up yourself,
right,
just to keep stuff on the shelf. And I mean, I'll give you a little simple example. I noticed this summer, I mean, watermelon, a lot of watermelons impacted from China. Most people don't realize that. A lot of watermelon comes from China. And because of supply chain and shipping challenges globally, I mean, this year's watermelon crop wasn't very good. I'll be right honest with you. I enjoy my watermelon in August. But I mean, we import a lot of stuff. And you've got like tropical type vegetables like bananas and papayas. You get them down in Central and South America. And, you know, border crossing has been hard during COVID.
Yep.
They try to get your stuff in by cargo. You're trapped in New York and California. So you may have seen images of all these cargo ships waiting to queue in, and we don't have enough longshoremen. Right. And, you know, even China has shut down the second biggest cargo port because of a COVID outbreak.
Yep.
Anytime there's a COVID outbreak anywhere, you're going to see a supply chain problem. You guys also saw today, retailers are telling people to buy early, stock early, discourage again a run in toilet paper, right? And to try to discourage that behavior.
Yes.
Again, because of getting products in, it's pretty tough. I didn't realize that when you unload a cargo, those big, those big metal containers.
Yeah.
When you empty one, you send the empties back to origin, or you fill the empty for something that you are sending back. So it makes sense. So if I'm shipping in to the US from China watermelons, then, you know, you're shipping back perhaps soybeans using the same containment system.
Sure. So
right now, because of all the weird problems globally we're having on making stuff, there's empty containers sitting globally with nothing to send back.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's, you know, unless it's in the, you know, because we're so desperately trying to get everything in, we don't have time to send back empty containers. It's part of something I never realized. When the world was running smoothly, you never felt it.
You don't think about these things. That stuff just shows up when you want it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite amazing. So there's a mishap at any, you know, cargo facility on any place globally. There's impact. And we saw that the Suez Canal. Remember the cargo tanker that was trapped in the Suez? You know, that screwed up billions of dollars of global trade during the day and impacted even our supply chain impacted our supply chain of getting products.
Yeah, it really does show the fragility of the supply chain around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, it explains why we have a U.S. presence in the Suez, because Iran, you know, sits at a choke point going into the canal. So there's a lot of these, you know, global international politics in the Middle East, with Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Iran and others, you know, about, you know, the importance of free shipping and access, you know, the fight over the South China Sea of China, because, you know, over 40% plus of the world's trade goes through the South China Sea, whatever country controls that, controls trade, which is why the neighboring countries are flipping the lid for obvious reasons.
Yeah,
and not just, and also shipping rights, there's security issues as well. And, you know, a lot of stuff moves by major cargo tankers still.
It's a war tactic that dates back, hundreds of centuries, you know, cut off your enemy's supply.
Exactly it. You're absolutely right. And, you know, and we're always trying to find new routes, right? People try to get under Africa. People try to get under South America. That's why we have the Panama Canal, the Suez Canal, right? To try to reduce the time it takes to get goods moving from one place in the world to another.
Yeah, and don't put all your eggs in one basket, literally, right?
Literally.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about, I read today, Jackie, about the report out of the Senate regarding kind of post-pandemic Massachusetts when it comes to the economy. Have you had a chance to look at that at all?
I only got to see the article. I haven't actually read the report yet. The so-called reimagining.
Yeah.
My staff pointed out to me that stealing from the Beatles. And I'm kind of like, let's not drag the Beatles into this.
That's right. Although John Lennon might be proud. Who knows?
Well, if we start doing a bed in, We'll have another conversation. I'm doing an interview with my bed because I'm protesting from there. We'll talk.
Okay.
Or maybe you won't even have an interview from there. I probably not recommend it.
But it's, I mean, it highlighted things that you and I have talked about for over a year now is, you know, the need for a better internet, equitable housing, racial justice, you know, childcare, the major issues that we've talked about before.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that was presented actually fits into a lot of the buckets of the federal money. It's just a report, so it's not an actual bill. So people start like panicking over. Don't panic just yet. It's just a recommendation, despite the fact that House Ways and Means was still taking testimony as of yesterday. Today's Wednesday, right? As of yesterday, they were still taking testimony from folks on their ideas on how to use the Fed money. So, you know, as been said more than once, this is a very rare once in a lifetime opportunity for the state to get this type of money, as well as the city of towns got their money already, and all the universities got a little bit of money as well, depending, you know, your situation. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's the buckets. And, you know, if there's, you know, was it, we saw in the Globe yesterday, the black business entrepreneurs want $1 billion of investment.
Yeah.
But it's only $5 billion, people. I mean,
that's right.
You know, and you're going to $1 billion where? In Boston? Well, what about the rest of us, right? As I like to put it, it's more than just Boston, folks.
There's 7 million people live in Massachusetts. Yeah.
And 700,000 live in Boston.
Yeah.
So they are a major economic force and you know, major portion of our population. But, you know, it needs to be a statewide thought process. I understand the importance of broadband, clearly, but also workforce development issues in rural areas and even urban areas. You know, rethink how to do that. I mean, tuition assistance for things like mental health and healthcare is being discussed on the table. Language access issues. I think pandemic has shown the administration's inability to provide fully to our entire population, especially as we did with PUA and gig workers.
Yes, good point. Hadn't thought of that, right? Yep.
Yeah, they were very well behind this. I like to say it wasn't just me. All our colleagues, the entire legislature was getting increasingly annoyed over the last year regarding healthcare information dissemination, as well as workforce and unemployment dissemination during the height of pandemic, when unemployment rate spiked to 14%. And a lot of folks couldn't understand what was happening because there was no way to communicate with them.
Yeah, ironically, the folks that were most impacted were the ones that were the most ignored.
That's correct. It really hurt the real Main Street part of the economy. Well, white collar workers mostly were sort of okay. You know, the guys that, you know, work in retail, guys that sweep your floors, you know, a lot of the wage workers and, you know, gig workers, photographers, and the folks that depend on events as well as tourism, you know, were the most badly impacted. And a lot of those folks, you know, in this state represent immigrants and other people who don't speak English as the first language.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So that was a glaring, you know, downfall, I think, for sure.
Yeah. And certain populations are having a harder time getting vaccine information out, like, you know, up in Lawrence, you know, the low, the Cambodian community. Chelsea's been very good on vaccination outreach, very high focus in that area because, you know, people who do a lot of cleaning in the buildings, baking, you know, in a minimum wage area. And even though, you know, pandemic was going on, you know, a lot of people doing a sanitation tend to be at the lower end of the wage scale.
Right. I know there's a large population in New Bedford that was having difficulty getting information as well there. So Springfield as well, probably too. So yeah, these are areas, you know, not surprisingly, that were highlighted in this report. Is the House doing a similar kind of study, if you will?
I don't know. I mean, as I think you've all seen in the papers, there's a weird ass one upmanship behavior in the Senate versus Speaker DeLeo.
Yes.
It is not Speaker DeLeo.
Right.
It is Speaker Mariano. So I can't speak on behalf of the speaker nor the office about how they're going to respond.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to just suggest to wait and see how the speaker decides to respond if he chooses to.
Okay, fair enough. But regardless, it is going to take, you know, both branches of the legislature to come to an agreement for any of this to happen. So you'll get your shot.
Yeah. It's not a standard appropriation in the sense that it's not tax money. We're not taxing you. So, but historically in the Constitution, you know, appropriations start in the House.
Yep. That's right. Yeah.
So we should get first crack. I don't have a timetable.
Okay.
On what's going to happen. We're trying to get a sense right now from Ways and Means, and we're still trying to get a sense of, you know, how big are we going to ask? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I'm suspecting, given the volume of emails I'm receiving from everybody about what to spend the money, I think the requests have outstripped how much money we have at this point.
I'm sure that's true. It's happening at the local level too. I'm sure the mayor here in Quincy is being inundated with thoughts and ideas and suggestions and demands.
I would think so. I mean, you know, other communities have already started their listening sessions from constituents about, you know, how to spend this money. And there are some restraints. For example, you can spend money on payroll, but it has to be directly pandemic related.
Okay.
You can't use it to fill up the collective bargaining agreement, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you're doing direct pandemic related work, I mean, you can provide some financial stipends or hazard pay, whatever you want to call it.
Sure. Yeah.
But I mean, there are some limits of what you can do on that.
Yeah.
I mean, the city, for example, could do something that needs to be talked about more is housing assistance. The balloon payments are coming on tenant renters as well as retail renters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely. And that's something that municipalities can do themselves, and something that we're looking at too, about whether or not and how would you do rental assistance for both private residential tenants as well as small businesses.
Okay. Yeah, it was, I mean, the first allocation back in the spring, it was given directly to the renter, to the tenants.
Yeah. Yeah. The city has money. They could do that here. And like I said, that's kind of a big part of our conversation also. In
mm-hmm. Yeah. I know a lot of it, or some of it at least, will go to some of the social service agencies, already has here in Quincy, to help their efforts, you know, QCAP, Father Bills, Interfaith, places like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There might be more coming as we go down the road. I mean, the FEMA stuff is about done because, you know, state emergency is over here. And, you know, a lot of another bucket of money people didn't realize we were getting at was the FEMA money, particularly on the homeless housing issue, COVID as a natural disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So with the end of the state emergency, the governor can't ask, obviously, more funds from FEMA.
Yep. Because there's nothing to fund, according to him, right?
According to him, yes.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that arise when you stop the state of emergency.
Yeah, yeah. So the actual numbers are headed in a better direction this week than what they were last week when we talked, Tacky.
Yeah, I mean, vaccination levels are going up. I actually have not had a chance to look at this week's numbers. It is only Wednesday, though. So mm-hmm. a lot of these numbers come out on Fridays. And there's always a bit of a delay on the data.
Yeah.
So, I mean, vaccinations are good. I mean, we're in the mid high 70s. We're approaching, you know, slowly, but getting to 80% on first shot.
Yeah.
We're slowly, but steadily, you know, trying to get to 70% on the second shot. So we're creeping up there. And generally, like we saw last spring, when we got vaccination, cases went down.
And we're hoping that happens again. Now, of course, with younger people eligible to get the vaccine also, that will help.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, part of, you saw kids in Quincy High getting shots that made the Patriot Ledger. I mean, as we get closer, as kids particularly participate in sports, as, you know, when college kids came mm-hmm. back and our own college kids head out there, there are mandatory vaccination requirements in many schools these days and workplaces now, really pushing a vaccination in workplace also. So, you know, as we sort of come back to any kind of maybe normal, I'm not really convinced we're going to come to a full normal. You know, there is a heavy push to keep other people safe from people that could potentially be infected because they choose not to be vaccinated. Now, I do, again, repeat the caveat that Delta virus, you can still be a carrier while vaccinated unknowingly. But if you have two people that are vaccinated, you're a carrier, and the other one gets an infection but doesn't transmit to somebody else, the virus dies there. Yeah. Both of you may be asymptomatic and feel wonderful when that's happening. So the goal, of course, is to create dead ends for the virus. They can't spread, and vaccination is the way to do it, unless you guys want to go hide in your house constantly to keep contact from other folks, which is why, you know, everyone's had to play keep away. from each other, you know, throughout the height of pandemic, because right. you know, it jumps from person to person to person.
Yeah, I think the federal government just authorized expanded rapid at-home tests too. So, you know, better late than never, I suppose.
Yeah, I missed the part in Good Morning America. Apparently, one of them had to do a recall.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I got to look. You guys can look it up on the internet. I say stuff. You guys can look it up yourself. I know. But I mean, I was this morning trying to catch the news, and I think one of them is having a bit of an issue. But again, I mean, these tests are not 100% accurate in the first try, which is why they always recommend two tests.
Yeah, of course, the danger is a false negative. You know, you don't want to be out there in the world if you're thinking you're fine and you're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why a lot of countries travel. They're trying to get into some countries. The question is, you know, 7 days quarantine, 14 days quarantine, yeah. two test requirement, test get on the plane, test get off the plane. I mean, you know, vaccinations, if we somehow, again, come to some uniform method of vaccination identification, entering and leaving countries, you know, that would alleviate a lot for need for testing and quarantine. But it doesn't appear we're close to that just yet.
Yeah. I think your heating contractor has arrived.
Yeah, you can hear the noise, huh? The bit of buzzing.
The reason for the earphones.
Yeah, so I guys, I apologize again for this type of situation.
Any update on reopening the State House, Jackie?
No new news from last week that I gave you about you know, the reopening committee, and we're waiting it out. We did get another email of a individual that is COVID positive that was in the State House on the 23rd of September. Oh. Contact tracing is going on. And again, I mean, it's a reminder to us all that, yeah, it's still out there. So what to tell you?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're still seeing it in professional sports as well. So yeah, we're still dealing with it for sure. What is coming up on your committee that we should be curious about?
Well, we just completed a round of scheduled hearings this past Monday. We're now preparing a bunch of late file bills. These are bills that were filed after the filing deadline passed this past February. Well, February is a long time ago now. And our reporting deadline for bills under Joint Rule 10 is February 2nd. The first Wednesday in February.
Okay.
Maybe it is February 2nd. Hold on. I'm going to look at my calendar now.
Also Groundhog Day, by the way.
Yeah, Groundhog Day. Yeah, it is February 2nd. Yeah. Oh,
there you go.
Yeah, so let's, you know, it's I guessed correctly.
Okay.
You know, at this stage of the game, we some late file bills, you know, a lot of home petitions regarding expansion of limited liquor licenses in communities that we give a lot of scrutiny for. But we do have a couple of topic matters we pushed off to January. One is the topic on car right to repair. Mm-hmm. That is still pending in federal court. Supposedly November 2nd, the court's going to issue a ruling.
No.
Why do we try to push this out? Is because if they testify before us, it's a public record. They can use that in court. Mm-hmm. So I prefer people not testifying on a pending litigation.
Okay.
You could say they won't show up, but that doesn't help the committee either, because the court case determination will help us provide guidance on what we can and cannot do.
Oh.
If there's an appeal, obviously we're not going to do anything if there's an appeal because it's not a completed case yet. So we're pushing that January. We have the so-called body works bill. You probably have heard talk about this last time out, where, you know, particularly the AG's office wants to jam everything else that isn't massage therapy into massage therapy. So things like Reiki and Qigong and a lot of other types of meditation medicines and even yoga into a licensed format. So if you, these are historically unlicensed professions, and the argument for law enforcement is because these professions involve sex trafficking. Yeah, if you guys are listening, you guys know better that that's not true.
Right.
We do have the board of registration of massage therapy. I mean, that's where a portion of sex trafficking occurs there. You know, the feds, the state, and have been working very hard, including Massachusetts, to clamp down on that kind of stuff. But I mean, the accusation from law enforcement and the Attorney General's office is that things like Reiki encourages sex trafficking. And Yeah, that's my reaction too. And it has an adverse effect on people to practice things like Qigong. Obviously, a Chinese physical health component. You guys can see where I'm going with this mm-hmm. down the road. Mm-hmm. My conversation with Leishi's office last year was trying to clue them in on this.
There's some politics involved, I'm sure, with this whole initiative. There have been some high profile cases, so maybe trying to get balls on those.
Yeah, but those are massage therapy
cases. Right.
And the Board of Registration, state and federal law enforcement, are very involved on tracking and digging those up. But
and locally too, at least here in Quincy, I know.
Yeah, Quincy police have done some stakeouts. You guys mm-hmm. can look it up in the ledger. It's easy enough to find.
Yep.
Including one that was across from YMCA.
That's correct.
Seems I remember that story.
Yes.
But I mean, in terms of Reiki or Qigong or yoga. Yeah.
Yoga at the Kennedy Center.
Exactly. Very low probability of that happening. Right. So, like I said, this is becoming a bit of a quandary conversation with the AG's office.
Interesting.
The public hearing should be interesting. Last year we had well past 300 people testifying.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, that was in person. Virtual format, obviously, trying to manage that many folks is a whole different can of worms that as we get closer to this hearing, there'll be a lot of scheduling involved from our end, trying to figure out how to do this orderly.
Yeah, and written testimony too, is that accepted?
Oh, yes. I'm into probably about 400 emails against the bill.
Is that right? Wow. Okay. All right. Yeah. So stay tuned. Watch that one.
Yeah.
Redistricting, Tacky. I know that the city here in Quincy at least has finished up their maps.
You clued me in that something was happening last time. So I did get a look at the map. It is very different in Ward 5, particularly.
Yes.
In the Walston area. And the line cuts the city has proposed along Ward 1, where it stretches now past Edison Park into River Street. My district keeps getting bigger. If the based on the precinct numbers, it looks like whether I stay at 13 or shrink to 12, I might be still within the 5% margin of error. To allow a district. So I'm not entirely clear. Am I going to grow in terms of population or not in terms of the 5% margin errors to put the districts together, but geographically speaking, in terms of the size of the district I have in Quincy, it's definitely getting bigger.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Geographically.
Yeah.
The House and Senate are going to use the numbers that municipalities have already been approved by the Secretary of State as their basis. Now, the big question, this is the thing that was freaking everyone out and should still, is whether they're going to stick to census blocks in certain situations. And census blocks will result in divided precincts.
Yeah. I know they're trying to avoid that at all costs because you could have, one person on one side of the street in one precinct and your neighbor across the street in a completely different precinct.
That's absolutely true. And I really don't want to deal with trying to figure out if I have to deal with split precinct because they say use census blocks. And I am going to be strongly encouraging Chair Moran to not do that.
Okay.
Particularly those of us in Quincy to try to keep us using the precincts that are approved by the Secretary of State now that the city sent it up to them. I'm be surprised if the Secretary has major issues. They've been providing a lot of guidance directly to all cities and towns regarding these maps.
They are the ones that know their communities best. So, and at least I know here in Quincy, Nikki Crispo has done her utmost best to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, and it's tough, to put these maps together.
It is.
Your polling places won't change this time.
Right.
The wards are staying the same this time. But in my election cycle next year, the polling places may change.
Mm-hmm.
You may or may not be in the same ward anymore or same precinct. There's going to be a massive adjustment in next year. And being not a presidential year, people won't get a test run.
That's right.
In March.
Yep.
So first test run on these new maps will be in September.
Yep. And of course, all the other options probably will be available, right? Early voting, mail-in voting, no excuse, absentee voting.
Yeah, the you know, there is obviously, I'm in favor of this, as well as the House has stated position in favor of, you know, permanent mail-in voting, as well as the Senate. And the vote, the so-called Votes Act is floating out there. The Senate is voting on something, I believe, this week.
Okay.
To try to make a go on the expanded voting. People seem to enjoy more opportunities available for them to vote in greater convenience. And again, code flu and COVID season, perhaps you can call it now, is coming this fall, November. And, you know, maybe there's some people who are immune compromised or, you know, not feeling well, or, you know, perhaps having medical treatment or, you know, any other number of reasons, you know,
combination transportation issues. Yeah, it could be anything.
Anything. I mean, combination of absentee, early voting and mail-in voting, no excuse voting, you know, creates those options for people to continue to participate in democracy.
Yep, absolutely. Speaking of the pandemic, how are other countries faring in your view, Jackie? I know you like to keep an eye on international affairs.
Yeah, China's closed in about 80% vaccination. They've been, you know, they've been mandating because, you know, they can.
Because they can. Yeah.
That's you right. Can't really, you can't fight the Chinese government when you're in China at all. So, I mean, but that's a big deal because, again, global supply chain, they recognize that they need to beef up their game huge because of the global impact. I mean, places like Malaysia and Thailand are still struggling. I know Thailand's island Phuket is 100% tourism. They took priority first with vaccination. They're attempting to see if they can reach that point where, you know, it's, you know, that, you know, people coming in will be okay. They plan like 100,000 people as the first test run. They're like the first 30,000 people showing up. But obviously, tourist economy, they've been shut down for so long. There's really not a lot of amenities that can come right back online.
Right.
Malaysia's decided to come out of lockdown. They're taking a chance, even though they don't have sufficient vaccination, to see what happens and try to get their manufacturing back online because we need our hospital gloves. You know, big deal. As you saw, the Japanese prime minister basically resigned over COVID after a year of unable to keep it under control, especially after the Olympics.
Yeah, vaccination rollout in Japan was just abysmal. It was terrible. Yeah,
they're just thing in the mid-40s on full vaccination. It is absolutely miserable. So Korea's similar problem. Again, you know, able to organize, but not enough vaccine. Our neighbors to the north and our neighbors to the south are very eager to continue to vaccinate like mad, unlike certain parts of the U.S. Vaccine hesitancy is obviously exists everywhere, but in lower amounts in other countries. You know, places like France is approaching 80% vaccination. You know, the Dutch are looking to fully reopen the economy now and move forward. So the British are kind of in a weird zone where they have a very high vaccination rate, but Delta has pocket Delta pop-ups in unvaccinated areas, familiar story to us. Yeah. You know, insufficient vaccinated areas is causing them problems. And the EU is very hesitant to let the English come in without a quarantine. And the US continues to be a question mark for the EU because, you know, people don't like to tell people they're vaccinated, and the vaccination rate isn't high enough in the US compared to some EU countries.
Yeah.
And of course, there's still Africa, right? You guys hear about the, you know, vaccine inequities in poor nations, you know, Central America, Africa. You know, there continues to be a lot of question marks about, you know, what's going on there. The Chinese now shipping vaccine out again to less developed countries. I know the US has as well. But, you know, given the two-dose vaccine and these regions are not have great infrastructure, healthcare, especially refrigeration, much less, you know, getting out to the public, you know, those challenges still exist out there.
Right. So it's still with us. And the, you know, the biggest concern is another variant, if not enough people get vaccinated. I heard an estimate now it has to be closer to 80 or 90% before you can consider it, I guess, contained.
Yeah. So-called herd immunity is directly related to infection ability. The more infectious it is, the higher you need herd immunity because you can't keep up with it.
Right.
So has now been proven, you know, Alpha very early on, you know, was the first more rapid infection rate, you know, 50% more infection than original COVID. And now you have Delta, which is now closer to chickenpox level, which mm-hmm. is, you know, many times over than the original COVID and Alpha. So it overtook things like Lambda. You know, Delta was just overran another variant.
So all the precautions remain. Masks, vaccines, social distancing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been going indoor mask. People to see me, you know, have seen me do that. I still do my best keeping distance. I'm fairly comfortable outdoors without a mask, particularly if the air is good. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I do try to limit human interaction with folks, generally speaking, still. But I, you know, as you heard, I mean, I've gone to dinner with friends and mm-hmm. you know, they're vaccinated. You know, people I don't know, obviously, I have the same hesitation a lot of folks do.
Right. A lot of private fundraisers are actually having events, but with a vaccine requirement attached to them. So I think that's going to be kind of the new normal going forward.
Well, the Boston Theater District's reopened with that. Yeah. New York Theater District, the sports arenas, TD Bank mm-hmm. is requiring a mask and a vaccination identification. I mean, you know, let's think from a business standpoint. I talked to this with the beer distributors as well. If you're a business and you're now a super spreader, how is that going to affect your business?
Biogen.
So that's the Marriott. Who wants to stay at a Marriott that you hear had 100 infections come out of it?
Right.
Now, whether or not you'd be like, oh, well, they sanitized, you know, they took precautions afterwards. The stigma is still there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a business owner and you encounter a large cluster, maybe someone dies associated with your business, you know, social media out there and everybody knows in a heartbeat what everything's going on, it feels like, although Facebook was down for like 6 glorious hours, as far as I was concerned. I don't like social media, as you guys know. Right. You know, it's, you know, imagine that impact on your business. Does anybody want to be called a super spreader business?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think not, for sure.
And there's also an interesting question about liability that has yet to arise. I mean, there's been a push in Congress to give businesses 100% liability immunity. But, you know, that was during the height of COVID and insurance issues. It was just kind of a more complicated topic.
And there was no vaccine at that point, right? Yeah.
There was no vaccine. It was a very complicated topic about that. Now, you know, if I have a big venue with 500 people and, you know, I'm, you know, responsible for what's going on in there. Someone gets sick, they die.
Yeah.
Who's responsible?
Yeah, I can see a case for that for sure.
Yeah, because you have vaccination as an option to reduce the probability. So you're right. It's not like when we didn't have vaccines, your risk level is higher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a venue or an employer or a business owner, you know, they're inside your sphere of control. You know, if something bad happens, and this is kind of a lot of question marks still as I keep going through this COVID life, what these things are, and I don't have answers for you. I have no idea. I just know that these are real problems that are happening, and there may be more occurring.
Yeah, we're already seeing some insurance HMOs, you know, increasing rates for the unvaccinated if they get sick. So that raises ethical questions too.
Well, it's like insurance regarding smokers, right?
Yep.
You know, a lot of things that was done in Obamacare, you know, got rid of pre-existing conditions in terms of insurance. But not, you know, some things aren't considered pre-existing conditions if you do it to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we use smoking as an example because of the fact that that's self-inflicted. It isn't like a genetic disease. It isn't like a predisposition because of new modern science. We know how come your people predisposition to certain types of ailments. You know, science gives us better clues. Hopefully insurance companies follow that science.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, COVID here is a bit of a interesting issue for insurance companies because treatment is very expensive. And people always keep pointing out the death rate. It's not the death rate. It's a hospitalization rate. Again, you know, the clogging of hospitals has an impact on people who really need hospital care. People cannot get selective surgery or optional or non-life-threatening surgery. But, you know, things like a hip replacement, for example, can kind of function. But, you know, it's painful functional
mm-hmm.
While they had to take care of COVID patients. And, you know, ventilators and all these treatments that are available aren't cheap. And they can't make enough.
Right. Yeah. It's a catch 22 situation for sure. So you don't want to get into.
Yeah. And as you see new therapies from Merck has a new therapy to try to get approved, as a Tessica has now a new therapy to try to get approved. It's not a substitution for vaccination, but don't expect the treatment cost to go down.
Right. Let's leave on a positive note, Jackie. Let's see. Let's think of something positive. Are you going to the Christmas parade in Quincy this year?
Oh, I've gone sometimes and not other times, to be honest with you all. I don't even know if people notice I'm there some years. We'll see how it goes. I'm not really hesitant about, again, it's an outdoor event. Although, it is walking from the Firestone all the way to basically the Knights of Columbus. So, I'll get my steps in. I think's the way to put it. But I don't know yet. Maybe we'll get there, maybe not. I haven't really decided about that stuff. Some indoor events, I've, been kind of picking and choosing depending on the size of the venue and what the expectation of crowd is.
Right.
As we get closer, I'll make a decision. I've always made those decisions close to the game time, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's going to happen this year. It didn't happen last year, so it's back on this year. Sunday, November 28th, actually.
Yeah, it should be good. We did Flag Day. That went fairly well. I know a lot of people were away on vacation. Everyone was scattered all over the place this past summer just to get away. But it was a great crowd then. And, even though we went to, November could get chilly, we always had great crowds despite the weather.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All righty. Reach out to you as always, of course.
617-722-2014, 617-722-2014, mash a button, you get to a staffer. Leave a message. Obviously, you can email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. As you kind of heard, I had like hundreds of emails and body works already.
Yes.
So I do my best to try to filter it out. And some stuff does go to junk mail, folks. So I'm now sifting out my junk mail on top of the inbox mail. Microsoft Outlook is somewhat challenged on my email identification. So it adds to my sifting. And of course, you guys have heard of State Representative Tacky Chan. You can see my public hearings on there. The public hearing that was interrupted because of Facebook going down on Monday is available on the state legislative website. And, we provide links to that on my page as well if people want to see me wearing a tie.
Okay.
I don't know if people miss me wearing tie. People are surprised I do wear shirts with no ties, as you've seen. Much every week for about a year and 18 months or so.
Yeah, actually, last week when you wore a tie, I was a little bit taken aback because I hadn't seen that.
I do own other clothes.
Yes.
It seems to be a shock to a lot of people when they see me. There's a number of ways you can reach me. Again, be aware that I'm drowning in email now.
Sounds good. Appreciate it. Always good to talk to you, Tacky.
Good to talk to you. See you in a week.
All right. Bye-bye.